You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 316.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Klar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. This episode should, by the way, long time no hear. Sorry once again for the delay, but I can guarantee you I already have two episodes in the bag, but I wanted to do this solo show first, so we're going to be on a more regular schedule. I think I said once every other week, but we might go back to a weekly schedule for a little bit. We might fill one in now because I have a few more episodes to get to. This episode is a solo episode. It should be a little shorter. And it's a little more personal. A lot of stuff has happened over the last month, both personal and in the world, for given the topics to talk about. So this will kick off the spring season for The Local Maximum. All right, the last few weeks started with a random New York earthquake on April 6th. I was in New York on that day. I was coming in to teach the data structures class at NYU. I did not feel the earthquake, so I felt a little bit, like I missed out. I got out of the subway. I believe the earthquake was occurring as I was getting out of the subway on Astor Place. I probably mistook it for another train. It probably didn't feel much different. But that was the day when I was teaching at NYU, and of course, 30 minutes later, the emergency alert comes on as if that's going to do us any good. The earthquake was inconsequential in general. I don't think there was any damage or anything. But of course, everyone started talking about it immediately. I sort of miss earthquake Twitter. And so, that was a good kickoff for a very happening month. I think I walked into a coffee shop right after that to think coffee. There are other people who didn't feel it. Maybe it's just Astor Place is always a little shaky. And so if I'm on Astor Place, maybe I didn't feel it. But I feel like I missed out. I definitely felt the earthquake in 2011 when it hit New York. See, it's very, in California, the idea that they're not going to feel the earthquakes, like this is, they don't really talk about this. And many of you out there are probably from places where there are lots of earthquakes. This is a big deal for us. I remember the earthquake of 2011. I felt that one. There was also an earthquake of 2001, which I didn't feel, but I saw some animals in the backyard going crazy. I was in Connecticut then. So that was the first large-scale natural occurrence of the month. Then, of course, came the eclipse 3 days later on April 8th. And it's always tough to make travel plans for the eclipse because you feel like everyone's going up for the eclipse. And you don't know, you hear rumors that roads are going to be closed and the traffic is going to be crazy. So I was in Vermont for that. My plan, you always have many years to plan for the eclipse, but for some reason we always plan at the last minute. So what I did was I stayed overnight in southern Vermont. That's not where the eclipse was, as I drove up there. Apparently I wasn't the only person who did that. Then the day of the eclipse, I was going to drive north to Smuggler's Notch, which is kind of a family resort type place in northern Vermont. I'd been there before a long time ago, and so I was a little bit worried about getting up there. I heard that other people at the hotel were getting up at 5 a.m., and I was like, well, we're not getting up at 5 a.m., so I hope we don't miss it. It's at 3 p.m., but it turned out that there was no traffic, almost no traffic. Like, there were other cars on the road, but I didn't hit anything, which maybe leaving at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. Maybe if I left later, there would have been, but there just wasn't. So that was really nice. And then we got up there, and it looked like it was going to be a cloudy day. Now, the first time I saw a total eclipse, that was back in 2017. I went to Nashville, Tennessee. I also drove down to Nashville from Louisville, and that was quite a drive. I also had to wake up at 6 in the morning for that one. And the problem was it was a really nice day, warm, hot, sunny day in Tennessee. And it was summer, so it was really hot. But it was partly cloudy, and a cloud covered it up at the last second. Now, that was okay because I still got to, you know, experience the whole, oh, you're in the moon's shadow and it's a total eclipse, so it's turning dark. And I remember in that one, you know, because there were more trees in that one, there were better reflections. It was the summer. And so you could see, you know, the holes in the trees and the half moon looking sun being kind of reflected on the ground everywhere. So that was pretty cool. And then and then you experience the darkness, and I, you know, heard the crickets get out and everything. But I just did not see the actual eclipse. So this time I kind of assumed the same thing was going to happen. There was cloud cover. The weather app said there was cloud cover coming in. And I know other people in the country experienced that, but guess what? The clouds did not materialize, and I saw the whole thing. It was pretty cool. I was at the base of a mountain, didn't go skiing, but it was an amazing experience. Really odd. Like, you kind of feel like, oh, it's dusk. It's you know, time to get ready to go to sleep. Your body kind of feels like it's the end of the day. And then at the end of it, so it gets dark. You see that kind of that black circle, for lack of a better term. And I could even see with the naked eye, and people who, you know about eclipses, can tell you this, but you could see like these kind of, they look like little fires around the moon. They're basically not pockets of the sun peeking out, but they're kind of like solar flares, or maybe I'm not getting the term correct, something like that's peeking out, and you can see it, and that's really cool. And then after 5 minutes, the sun starts to peek out. It looks like kind of a diamond ring effect, and you know to put back your glasses back on. And then, you know, that it was kind of a party, so they were announcing on the loudspeaker, like, now enjoy the bright sunny day. And it almost feels like you experienced 2 days in a single day, because then you forget that it's bright and sunny. I had a friend who was up in Canada on a barn and said the cows started to go into the barn. They thought it was the end of the day. There's a really interesting, it's just a cool experience. There are people out there who say, I don't care about eclipses. You know, they're natural. They're well understood. It doesn't matter, but I feel like there's something, you know, part of an important part of a human experience to kind of experience these natural phenomena and for me, it's kind of to speculate, you know, what people must have thought when they saw this. I used to read stories when I was younger about like the ancients thinking that these things were the end of the world. They don't feel like the end of the world. I kind of question those stories after hearing this, because it, you know, first of all, once it registers to you what's going on, it's over. It's over in 5 minutes. So I don't think there's anything that, maybe people go out and bang pots and pans, but pretty much, you know, people could just miss it if you don't know it's coming. But I think that the ancients actually probably knew, they spent so much time on tables of where all the celestial bodies are. They probably knew when these were coming, and attached more significance to it, than we do. So here's a cool thing about my trip that I did not realize. The last time I was in Smuggler's Notch, I was in high school with my family, we went up in the year 2000, and I remember it very well. It was the 2000 election had just ended, and I got to Smuggler's Notch, and I kind of looked around. I'm like, huh, I don't really remember this place very well. I don't quite remember what it looks like. Sometimes I go to a place that I've been to 30 years ago and it's like, oh, this is exactly like I remember. I didn't have such a good memory of the place. Maybe a tiny bit, there was like a few images in my brain. I'm like, okay, this is kind of familiar. But then as soon as people put on the glasses, I was like, wait a minute, there was an eclipse last time we were in Smuggler's Notch. And I looked it up and I was like, yes, I'm right. And that was a partial eclipse. So, you know, people weren't as interested in it, but there were people with, I did remember seeing people with glasses back then, and I did kind of look up to it with my, you know, with my fingers and try to block out the sun with my fingers so I could just kind of see the sun. I do remember that, and apparently that was the Christmas Day eclipse of 2000. I was skiing that day, so very, very cool to have that memory come back just as the eclipse was happening. All right, so we had the earthquake, April 5th. April 8th was the eclipse. Fast forward to April 12th. That was my birthday. I am now 40 years old, which is pretty cool. And, you know, I decided to go back to my old days on Yale Radio and look at a clip from Max and the Wiz, from which would be, crazily enough, 20 years ago, about like me mentioning that I turned 20 years old. We're going to have a little fun today. We're going to play a minute of that, and we're going to see what that show sounded like and what I sounded like at age 20. If you guys are interested in more clips from Max and the Wiz, certainly let me know. But I think that we talked a lot faster on Max and the Wiz. That was on the radio. You know, there are people getting in and out of your cars. We weren't like too hung up on kind of the intellectual stuff, even though it was at Yale. But sometimes we were. I mean, one of the things I really enjoyed with Max and the Wiz was talking about the science news and such. So I brought that in here into the local Maximum. But let's play this clip and I'll see what you think.
We do call in. That means it'll soon be your turn to weigh in on the issues. We've got the articles. You've got the mind. Our number is 203-562-1340. Write this down. If you're in the car, we'll remind you later. But once again, our number is area code 203-562-1340. When things get out of control, you have to be the voice of reason. And of course, my co-host joins us here on Max and the Wiz. It wouldn't be complete without the Wiz. It is with great reluctance, I mean with great pleasure, that I introduce to you Dan Wizia. Hi, Dan.
How you doing, Max?
Pretty good, pretty good. What's going on this week?
So much has been going on this week.
So I turned 20. That's cool.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. What happened? Wednesday, we had pizza night. Pizza night in Stillman College, Naples.
Night.
It was a lot of karaoke. I went up like 3 times.
Yeah, I hear you were just singing. You were vocals ringing around the place.
Yeah. What else happened this week? There was a lot of, you know, reality television,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, The Apprentice.
The Apprentice, who, they're doing pretty well, right? Who won?
This guy, Bill Rankick, won. Yeah. And they gave him a car.
A car? What do you think of the car?
They gave him this Chrysler car, and I was like, if I were him, I'd return that thing.
Why do you return?
Who wants that car? He would have done a lot better with, a true American car. Maybe,
right.
GM, like a Corvette.
Yeah.
That would have been like, look, we're giving you something nice.
All right. So that was a lot of fun. There's way more than that came from. I literally have hours and hours of recording from Yale Radio, Max and the Wiz. So anyway, I did, I had a bunch of people over at the top floor of my building, rented it out. Very cool. Okay. Then, that was, so birthday was Friday. The party was Saturday. Sunday was the end of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which kind of, if you take it from Seinfeld in the early 90s all the way up to the end of Curb Your Enthusiasm, that really is an end of an era. So the finale, it was good. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to make a finale that's like kind of going to be the best one in the series, which it wasn't. But Jerry Seinfeld came back. I don't want to ruin it for you. I just did. Well, no, I didn't ruin it for you. But that's maybe one reason to watch it. It was pretty good. All right, and then so that's already the 14th, right? So now fast forward to the 19th, April 19th, and now we have the Bitcoin halving, and so. If you remember correctly, when Satoshi Nakamoto launched Bitcoin back in 08, 09, I think really 09 was when the actual system was launched, the white paper was 08, it was designed so that every 10 minutes, every block, which is not always 10 minutes, but designed to on average be 10 minutes, whichever miner wins the block, I'm not going to get into how that is, but basically the more processing power you use, the more likely you are to win the block, you are going to win 50 Bitcoin. And then that halves every 4 years. So and until, you know, eventually it goes down to negligible. And now if it halves every 4 years, it shouldn't go down to zero. It should just get increasingly negligible. But I think because of the amount of decimals they're keeping track of, that it does go down to zero in the year 2140. But I think it will be much sooner than that when it essentially becomes irrelevant. But anyway, so, you know, as you know, if you have a a series like that, a geometric series like, you know, 1 + 1/2 + 1/4 plus an eighth, you know, eventually that will converge to 2. That converge to a maximum amount of Bitcoin that you'll ever get. And in this case, it's 21 million Bitcoin. So when he launched it, it was 50 Bitcoin a block. What was the first one? The first halving was in 2012. That would have been 25 Bitcoin. Then in 2016, you would have gotten 12 and a half Bitcoin. 2020, the halving back in May, I think we mentioned that. That would have been 6 1/4. And now we're down to 3 1/8. Let me actually look up. Let me see if I can look up in the archive if we did a show that talked about the halving back in 2020. So May 2020, yes, episode 118, we talked about the Bitcoin halving. So there we go. This show has now been through multiple halvings, which is pretty cool. And so now the amount of Bitcoin that is being released relative to the number that is out there, you know, every single year, is a very small percentage. So it's it has a very high stock-to-flow ratio. Stock-to-flow is just the ratio between the amount of an asset in existence and the amount of new ones that are pushed into the market every year, or every time period. So now the stock-to-flow for Bitcoin is less than gold. And so people are talking about how it's a really hard asset. The prices are not expected to, you know, because given past, given the behavior in the past, usually the price is not affected right away. But traders usually underestimate the effect of the halving, or even if they don't underestimate the effect, it's just traders go in as much as they can, but then you realize that when new people try to enter the market, they realize that there just isn't enough, and so the price goes up. And so historically, this has happened, you know, within 18 months of the halving. I suspect it's going to happen a little sooner this time, but it might not. Sometimes it doesn't start until several months after the halving. I think the 2012 one, which would have been the most extreme halving, you know, the first halving, I think it happened right away. We'll see. So a lot of traders are saying we're going to see a crypto bull run over the next 12 to 18 months. We'll see if that plays out. Typically, it's also preceded by 6 months of price gains, which have happened this time. So really cool. The arguments against this repeating are, I guess, that we now have the ETFs. So you have a much bigger market. I think that is more of an argument for it repeating. However, the ETFs have not seen the exponential increase in price that we've expected yet. So at some point, this is all going to come to a head, which is really exciting. This also coincides with many of the bankruptcies and, you know, bad actors from 2022 being kind of cleared out of the market. I mean, many of you have probably heard of Sam Bankman-Fried being sentenced to 25 years in jail. I don't know how I feel about that. It doesn't bring anyone's money back, but it also kind of coincides with many of these bankruptcies kind of winding down in court. It doesn't mean these bankruptcies are over. If you're in the bankruptcy, it can go on for many, many years, but a lot of these companies are sort of have kind of made their bankruptcy. The way bankruptcy court works is like, you know, there's sort of a plan to disperse the value back to creditors. And in many cases, there's like this initial value that they have on hand that they disperse. And then there's a whole bunch of fighting later on for more money. But many, many companies have had those plans dispersed and have had, the creditors have received at least some of their money back, sometimes shockingly low. But, you know, Celsius got it back this year. Voyager got it back last year, but I think most recently it's been announced that with a deal with FTX, Voyager creditors are going to get another disbursement. Again, if you had Bitcoin in there, a lot less than what you put in. But it's sort of winding down the uncertainty. What other ones? FTX. I think it's more clear what's happening with FTX. Genesis. They are very close to emerging from bankruptcy. If the court case goes the right way, but we'll find out over the next few weeks. But it does seem like this era of talking about bankruptcies and illiquid and insolvent companies is, I don't want to say it's at an end, it's at a pause, because this thing kind of repeats over and over. But the next time it repeats, it always repeats in a slightly different way. So in that case, it's very dangerous, investing in crypto assets, because this stuff can happen to you if you don't do self-custody. It also could be dangerous doing self-custody. So I would not tell people stay away from it because of that. You can make a lot of money in crypto, but aside that, many people just want to support it. But it's always something to keep in mind. All right, so this has been a very eventful month. I read a book on cellular automaton that I am going to discuss with Aaron in a little bit. We're actually going to do kind of a 1-2 punch this week, and I'm going to put both of them out. I did a few interviews. I did a second interview with Isaac Brodsky, who does who's working on a geolocation startup. They have some really cool visualizations, and so they work with location data. If you're interested in like maps and location, and if you're interested in computer science, definitely check out that interview. And I have a few more that are a little bit more kind of wild card-ish that you'll see in a bit. So I hope you enjoyed my kind of personal and news update, but stay tuned for, I think as soon as tomorrow, for my conversation with Aaron. Have a great week, everyone.
That's the show. The Local Maximum is now hosted on Substack. To support the show, join our online community on localmaximum.substack.com. Find show notes and additional materials at our website, localmaxradio.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. Remember to subscribe on your podcast app. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week.